In the weeks that followed, it became obvious to Tony Shaindinks, not to mention the rest of the Troop D personnel, that there wasn't enough manpower to institute 24-hour surveillance of the Buick in the shed out back. Nor did the weather cooperate. The second half of that August was rainy and unseasonably cold. Visitors added another headache. Troop D didn't live in a vacuum on top of its hill, after all. The motor pool was next door. The county attorney, plus his staff, was just down the road. There were lawyers. There were perps cooling their heels in the bad boy corner. The occasional Boy Scout tour, the steady trickle of folks who wanted to lodge complaints against their neighbors, against their spouses, against Amish buggy drivers taking too much of the road, against the state troopers themselves, wives bringing forgotten lunches or sometimes boxes of fudge, and sometimes just interested John Q's who wanted to look at what their tax dollars were buying. These latter were usually surprised and disappointed by the calmness of the barracks, the ho-hum sense of bureaucracy at work. It didn't feel like their favorite TV shows. One day toward the end of that month, Statler's member of the United States House of Representatives dropped by, along with 10 or 12 of his closest media friends, to do a meet-and-greet and to make a statement about the police aid, science, and infrastructure bill then pending before the House, a bill this fellow just happened to be co-sponsoring. Like many U.S. representatives from rural districts, this fellow looked like a small-town barber who had a lucky day at the dog track and hoped for a blowjob before bedtime. Standing beside one of the cruisers, Sandy thought it was the one with the busted headrest, he told his media friends how important the police were, especially the fine men and women of the Pennsylvania State Police, most especially the fine men and women of Troop D. That was a bit of information shortfall, there being no female troopers or PCOs in D at that time. But none of the troopers offered a correction, at least not while the cameras were rolling. They were, the representative said, a thin gray line dividing Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Taxpayer from the evil of the Chaos Gang, and so on and so on. God bless America, may all your children grow up to play the violin. Captain Dimit came down from Butler, presumably because someone felt his stripes would lend a little extra tone to the event, and he later told Tony Shaindinks in a low growl, "That toupee-wearing touch-hole asked me to fix his wife's speeding ticket." And all the time the representative was blathering and the entourage was touring and the reporters were reporting and the cameras were rolling, the Buick Roadmaster was sitting just 50 yards away, blue as deep dusk on its fat and luxy white walls. It sat under the big round thermometer Tony and Kurt had mounted on one of the beams. It sat there, with its zeroed odometer, and dirt wouldn't stick to it. To the troopers who knew about it, the damn thing felt like an itch between the shoulder blades, the one place you can't quite reach. There was bad weather to contend with. There were all kinds of John Q's to contend with, many who came to praise the family but who weren't of the family. And there were also visiting police officers and troopers from other barracks. These last were in some ways the most dangerous, because cops had sharp eyes and nosy minds. What might they have thought if they'd seen a trooper in a rain slicker or a certain janitor with a Swedish accent standing out there by Shed B, like one of those big-hat soldiers guarding the gate at Buckingham Palace, occasionally walking over to the roll-up door and peering inside? Might a visiting policeman seeing this have been curious about what was in there? Does a bear shit in the woods?